Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
We are off and rolling on a Monday, September 22nd, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on XetG_Kuhn71, alongside me as always, executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on XetC Dunning929. Connor, nice little ho-hum weekend.
Great weekend. Yourself? Great. I went to go see a play, Playhouse on the Square. You know, not too much else went on. Yeah, it's, yeah. I feel like something big might be maybe escaping me. Can you help me?
Well, real
think
quick,
about
let
it?
Me set the table. We have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll talk about Week 4 of college football.
Mm-hmm.
Not really much to write home about. 5 o'clock, David Cobble joined to talk about it. 6 o'clock, we'll have Harold Grader, the associate executive director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Blitz, 6:30. Trip around the NFL at 5:30. But yeah, this weekend was just it was a regular week. Wait, it's coming to me. Connor, hit it. How about it?
Let's go!
even in my doubt, and listen, Tiger fans have sat here and lectured me that I didn't believe because I picked Arkansas. I always said Tigers had a chance to win this ball game. But 32-31. Memphis Tigers get over top of the Arkansas Razorbacks behind a late fumble by Mike Washington Jr., punched out by Chris Bracey, and then Arrington Maiden, the backup quarterback, comes in to put the game on ice. What an unbelievable day it was at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, Connor. I mean, truthfully, it felt like a celebration for a lot of reasons, but that game in itself absolutely delivered.
Smells like barbecued hog, baby!
That was phenomenal,
I think every single Memphian probably lost their voice this weekend watching that football game. You could hear people screaming from houses. You could hear people's. It was absolutely joyous. I could not believe the performance that Memphis put on in that second half. One of the grittiest wins I've ever seen from the University of Memphis football program. It was a Memphis win through and through, all heart, grit, grind type of win.
First team all defense in that second
First
half,
First team
too.
All defense.
3 points allowed, 227 yards allowed, and two interceptions. Two turnovers. It was a phenomenal day at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. And I think the reason it won't be forgotten anytime soon is you also had the day of remembrance of Fred Smith. Before the game, a moment of silence, then the FedEx flyover, and then that game. I mean, coming back from 18 points down, the biggest comeback in Memphis football's history against an SEC opponent. They improved to, since 2014, 6-0 at home against Power Conference teams. Can I ask you, Connor, is that good?
It's pretty damn good.
I mean, that's insane to me. I mean, for a program that has been denied and denied and denied and denied by Power Conference after Power Conference, namely the Big 12, they tend to play pretty damn well against Power Conference opponents. And if you do the two Liberty Bowl games, 7-1 on that field against Power Conference opponents. I mean, I don't know how to paint the picture for Power Conference commissioners any better. This team is ready to compete against the teams in your conference. I'm looking at you, Big 12. You denied that $200 million offer, but screw that for now. Let's talk about this game, 32-31, comeback from 28-10. And what really just sticks out to me about Memphis's performance is they made some mistakes along the way. And I think there were situational things throughout that game that the coaching staff may have bungled a little bit. At the end of the game, you had the two-point conversion and the play call wasn't all that great. You missed that. You're down by five still instead of being down by four or down by three if you actually convert. And then they had the surprise onside after their first score. And that did not go well. That was not executed very well. Ryan said that in practice they executed it well, but they did not carry that over to the game. So, like, I don't even think that Memphis, in the grand scheme of things, and also you had the double pass thrown to C.J. Smith for his first touch of the year. He throws a pick on his only touch of the year, and I wish he would have sort of thrown it a little shorter, not thrown the vertical route, because Sutton Smith was wide open, and he can make one guy miss. Just throw it like a screen pass back. But there were some plays left off the field and some problems with the way that game was called, but there was some resolve from that team. The defense was so unbelievably opportunistic. And, like, when you talk about the guys that showed through, there's just a million names and some unlikely faces that we can bring up. The likely ones were obviously Brendan Lewis and Sutton Smith. Brendan Lewis got a helmet sticker there on a college football final, but 199 yards passing, one touchdown, one interception, 103 yards rushing, and two touchdowns. So he was great. I'm kind of getting used to the running quarterback thing, Connor, because his ability to make guys miss out in the open field and go get first downs at will on second and long and third and long, like, that's just something you cannot plan for as a defense, and I think it throws a complete loop into whoever they're playing, including Arkansas, and it adds a whole lot of rushing yards to their total. And by the way, The Rock was run on Saturday, brother.
Run it down their throat.
41 for 290, three touchdowns, a 7.1 average. And then, of course, Sutton Smith on top of that. It's so cool to see what he's doing after a year off, rehabbing from an ACL injury, 12 carries, 147 yards, one touchdown, and then the 64-yard touchdown run where he made a man miss in the backfield and just took off. He was again top 10 when it came to miles per hour in the open field. I think he reached 20.9 this week, miles per hour. So he's very fast. And you know what? When I'm watching him, he kind of gives me a little bit of Daryl Henderson Jr. vibes, where when he gets out in the open field, it's really hard to go catch him. He can run in between the tackles, off tackle. He's got a command of all of the places he's supposed to be on gap and zone schemes. The one thing that he does provide that Daryl didn't provide in the biggest way is the pass-catching ability. He didn't get to do a whole lot of that on Saturday, but he certainly can get out there in the slot and make some plays. He's got good hands. So I think he's sort of adds a little bit on top of that dynamic, but he sort of looks – he's got that sort of short to the ground, good center of gravity, and still has that just explosive speed
when
he gets to the open field.
His vision's fantastic. Yes. He always finds the hole.
And he's got strength, even though he does not look like he's the most massive build, just like Daryl Henderson Jr. He has got some strength in there. Xavier Ansari knows all about that on that 65-yard run. Arkansas linebacker number 10. Got stiff arm right in the face, and from there it was curtains. He's gone.
Talk about the block.
That play is so interesting to me because I think most people look at Sutton Smith as the hero, and that's true. He had to make a guy miss, and he took it 64 yards, and he did not get caught. But there were two separate guys on that play that I have to point out. One would be Chris Adams. Chris Adams, the left tackle, number 61. If you noticed, he was out at the beginning of the first, at the end of the first half. He had turned his ankle something vicious. And Ryan Silverfield has told us since then that he could barely walk at halftime. And they did not think he was going to go back in the game. So The right tackle would have to kick over to left tackle, and they'd have to make some changes. But Chris Adams, right when they were getting in the huddle to start that first drive of the second half, he walked up to his offensive line coach, Jeff Myers, and said, put me in the game. I'm ready to get in the game. So he played the entire second half, and on that play, there was a blitz from Arkansas, a run blitz, that he picked up beautifully, saw it crossing his face, and he drove the safety that came into blitz about, 6 yards down the line, collapsed the left side of the Arkansas defensive line and planted him, full-on pancake. And Sutton Smith, while he had to make a guy miss, that was the extra man. That was the unblocked hat. And Sutton Smith made him miss, but he had so much space to do so because of what Chris Adams had done to the blitzing safety on that play. And then I also have to give a shout-out to Cortez Brom. He's been on campus for 3 months, and he was really the springing tackle or the springing block on that 64-yard run. He held on to that corner until Sutton Smith passed him, and Sutton Smith, once he cleared that level, was absolutely gone. No one was going to catch him. So as much as you want to give credit to Sutton Smith for that run, you should. That was a well-executed play all around by that Memphis offense. Cortez Brom and Chris Adams definitely at the forefront of that. But Sutton finished 12 carries, 147 yards, at 64-yard run, and I think a lot of people would say, well, where would he be without that 64-yard run? 11 for 83. He still was averaging 7 yards a carry. It was not as if Memphis was outmatched by a defensive line in Arkansas who had a bunch of SEC bodies. They absolutely got after that Arkansas front seven the entire day, and what I noticed on a consistent basis was just hats on hats. Bodies on bodies. While they weren't completely dominating every single matchup, they were constantly in the right place, and it seemed like they were very well coached on what to do on any given run play. And they also differentiated the schemes pretty heavily. They had run a bunch of inside zone going into this game. I saw counter. I saw power. I saw a lot of different schemes that they ran up there, and they ran them very, very successfully. So to that question last week about are you worried about – okay, going into Arkansas, you open up the playbook, you see these different schemes being run. Are you worried about them running it for the first time in game? Yes, I may have been worried, but they came through. They were ready to go in that situation. Cortez Brom, to me, when we talk about important plays, you can bring up Arrington Maiden. You can bring up Cruz Law getting the sack late in that game against Talen Green. You can bring up all the picks, right? Jaden Dennis early, Kamari Wilson late. You can bring up the fumble. But I truthfully stand by this, and you may disagree with me. I think the most important play of that game was right there before half, 31 seconds to go. Deep ball thrown by Brendan Lewis to Cortez Brom for a touchdown. The difference between 28-10 and 28-17 going into half is massive from a mental standpoint. 3 scores as opposed to 2, especially when you're getting the ball coming out of the half. You feel as if you're in it. You can go win when you're down by 2. When you're down by 3, it's still an uphill battle, and the margin for error is so, so, so small. So in my opinion, I don't know how you feel, Connor, that was the most important play of the game. There was a lot of important plays, a lot of big plays. That play, to me, having been in situations like that, that definitely kept Memphis's mentality strong and in the ballgame.
I think it's certainly one of the most important plays of the game, and if you want to make an argument that it was the most important, I don't know if I can argue against it. I think it's the fumble. Like the punch out has to be the most important play of the game to me because it was in such a massive moment. Arkansas all of the sudden could run the football on Memphis, which they really hadn't been able to do a lot of the game. I know that they had big yards, but Memphis made it really difficult to run the football the entire game. And then that final drive, it just felt like he was finding the open space over and over and over again. And then that punch out happened, and it is one of my favorite moments ever watching Memphis football because I remember watching the play happen, and I was watching it with my family, and we were all like, does Memphis have the ball? Like, but Memphis has the ball because they got up and they were celebrating. I was like, ball, ball. And it was like that moment in Moneyball where Brad Pitt has his head down and he thinks that the A's have lost. And then that crack of the bat happens and you just heard, I heard Palmer say, did Arkansas fumble? And I whipped my head up, and we started losing our minds. It was just everything happened perfect for Memphis on that play. The way he was tackled, the angle in which the ball was available, the Superman punch.
Honestly, we haven't discussed it, but the Sutton Smith run, a lot of things had to go a certain way.
Right, right.
Without the blocks and without the mesh, Brendan Lewis took forever on that mesh to hand it off.
It allowed it to develop.
They were caught in a weird spot. They had a scraping linebacker who could make the play on Sutton and a defensive end who read it right and could have made the play on Brendan had he kept it. They waited just an extra tick longer, and that's why Sutton Smith was able to break that play. There was a lot of plays like that in that game. Now, Chris Bracey, who forced that fumble, ended up being defensive player of the week, 6 tackles, forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. I feel like he was the only one on the field, including Mike Washington Jr., who fumbled it, that realized it was a fumble. It was, just perfect Superman punch late right there. But getting back to the Cortez Bram play and that one, like, there's a Liberty Bowl voodoo.
Absolutely.
That exists. Like, because I know that there's a lot of Arkansas fans kind of calling out the obvious, right? Cortez Bram pushed off.
100%.
100%.
Sorry about it. Touchdown, Tigers!
100%.
Don't care, touchdown.
Without question, two-hand shove right in the chest of the DB to ultimately make that play. And there's a couple of ways that Tiger fans can take it. I think the second one I'll mention is the way you should go about this conversation with Arkansas fans. When they bring it up, the first way that I've seen it taken, and this is sort of the natural reaction, you can get defensive. You say, no, it wasn't. They were jostling anyway.
No, they weren't.
Oh, you guys didn't get screwed. That was just a great play by Cortez Bram. Go Tigers. That's one way to handle it. But I think the real way to handle it is accept it and just say that's the price you pay. That's the price of admission when you head to Memphis and play in that stadium. That Liberty Bowl voodoo just exists. And we can go back to the last game they won against a power conference opponent in that stadium, Mississippi State. They didn't down a punt. Calvin Austin takes it all the way back, whatever, 80-some-odd yards, whatever it was. And then we realize after the game, there were 2 number 4s on the field that did not get called, Calvin Austin and Mo White. So, like, there's just a voodoo. There's missed calls. There's things like that that happen in that stadium, and it works out for the best for the Memphis Tigers. That's something you have to accept. I like it. I enjoy it.
I think it would be silly of us to sit here and act like that wasn't a push-off. It's very obvious 100%. That it was a push-off. And to be honest with you, we talked about it all week.
I could not believe they called it on defense, by the way. That was hilarious.
I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. And what was even funnier is, like, all the linemen ran over to him, and everybody was celebrating, and he was kind of like, I think I may have put it. And then when it was on the – no, it was 100%. It was a pass interference on him. But it's an SEC crew, first off. So, you know, but that's the voodoo.
And it's the Liberty Bowl, brother.
It's the Liberty Bowl. That's
it's
the voodoo.
That's just what happens. That's what happens to you if you're a power conference
and
team.
And we can also be honest about
Memphis.
That's not the play that lost you the game.
No, it isn't.
And you put Memphis back in it. I think it gave Memphis some momentum heading into the second half, but Arkansas had every opportunity in the world. So, 2 things can be true. That was a pass interference on Memphis that should have been called, but Arkansas lost the game 15 different ways in the second half. Over and over and over again. They had opportunity, and they turned
the
ball over.
They had plenty of opportunities.
And again, what I was going to say, though, is we talked about it all week. Brendan Lewis's underthrow kind of actually worked out for the best in that moment.
Yeah, later in the game, not so much.
Not so much later in the game. But in that moment specifically, it worked out for the best.
And then we have to talk about how the game was capped off. Brendan Lewis loses his helmet. Instead of calling a timeout and putting in the starting quarterback that has gotten you to this point, instead of bringing him back in the game, calling that timeout, and allowing him to ice the game himself on 3rd and 8, or whatever, it was 3rd and 8, I believe, Ryan decides, we're not going to call this timeout. We trust our backup, Arrington Maiden. Arrington Maiden comes in. It was supposed to be a give the entire way. He decides, I'm not giving this. I'm going to run right up the middle where the running back was supposed to take this inside zone, and I'm going to go get it myself. and he proceeds to get stopped at the line of scrimmage and churn his legs through a 389-pound defensive tackle and carries him 7 yards, an 11-yard gain on 3rd and 8 on a read option from the backup quarterback. Like, that should tell you all you need to know about the makeup of this team and how much they wanted to win that ball game. In the end of the day, it was unbelievable to see Arrington Maiden in that situation do what he did. And I'll tell you this, I cannot wait for Thursday to talk to Ryan about that particular play to see what the hell are you feeding that guy?
How? 11 yards with a 300-pounder on his back like it was nothing.
I would guarantee the staff was just pretty okay with accepting, okay, it's 3rd and 8, let's hand this ball off, get a few yards, turn down as much clock as we can, punt the ball.
Defense has held it all half.
Try to end it that way.
Right.
I'm sure they were completely okay with that. But then you see Arrington Maiden break through the line, continue to turn his legs, and you say, okay, ball game now. We'll accept that. Backup quarterback does that with Brendan Lewis off to the sideline. I mean, that's something you can't write that. I mean, couldn't write something as good as that.
It's one of those plays where he will now be remembered in the history of Memphis football forever for one play. It was when he went in there, I think all of us were like, okay, just don't turn over the football. If you can get a first down somehow, that'd be a miracle. Ball snapped. He runs into the pile, and you're like, okay, they're going to get a couple of yards. Hopefully it's a good punt. The defense in the second half has been some of the best defense I've ever seen Memphis football play, ever seen them play. Just resist. Hold the line. And then he breaks through and just drags that lineman. And you're like, what in the hell is going on here?
What's happening?
I don't understand how he got through it. I don't understand how he didn't get tackled.
And the energy in that stadium when that play happened was phenomenal. I think that was the best crowd burst of the game, in my opinion. Outside, maybe the Sutton Smith.
It clinched the game.
Sutton Smith, 64-yard run. I guess the fumble also would go into that. But that crowd pop, seeing Arrington Maiden just will his team to a first down and a win, was something.
One of the most memorable fourth quarters I can ever remember watching Memphis football.
All right, now, continuing down the list of names that just showed up on Saturday, did you have any idea who Cruz Law was before?
I do now.
I had no idea who Cruz Law was, but he made two unbelievable plays when he was asked to make a play. He's a transfer from North Carolina. He's a redshirt freshman, still young, has some years. If he wants to stay in this program, he can stay in this program and be a difference maker. He was a difference maker on Saturday. But his two plays that I have to point out, late in the fourth quarter, after Memphis has stalled out, Arkansas is taking it down the field. They're in Memphis territory, and he gets a sack on Taylen Green on a coffee house blitz. You know what a coffee house is, Connor? Act like you're walked up. You act like you're going to drop back into pass coverage. The offensive line stops looking at you, and then you blitz. That's a coffee house blitz. He did that, brought Taylen Green down for a massive loss, stalled out the Arkansas drive, and then on the ensuing punt, that possession is when Memphis broke off the 64-yard run with Sutton Smith to go win the ball game. And then the other play that Cruz Law was a part of was the fumble at the end of the game that Mike Washington Jr. surrendered, that Chris Bracey punched out. And as much as Chris Bracey made a great play, Cruz Law is just as big a part in that. He got kind of trucked by Mike Washington Jr. after meeting him in the hole. Hit him as hard as he could, but Mike Washington was going downhill as fast as possible. But the way it turned out was Mike Washington's body was parallel to the ground on top of Cruz Law in that situation, so it gave Chris Bracey just enough time before the knee hit for Mike Washington Jr. to punch that ball out. But I had no idea that Cruz Law was even a part of this defense or going to play a massive role. And he came up big. Kamari Wilson, also an interception,
massive,
at the end of that game when they were down 31-26. And I also thought he had one of the biggest hits in the game on Taylen Green when Taylen Green tried to get rid of the ball late. Kamari Wilson came up and smacked him. And I think that's being knowing who Talen Green is as a player, knowing how dynamic he can be, you have to be able to impose your will on him at points in the game to get that confidence shaken, to make him realize what he's up against. And I thought Kamari Wilson did a good job of that. But there was just so many different guys that stepped up and made plays when they were asked of them. And that's what's most impressive to me about this win. You could talk about luck. You could talk about creating opportunities. You could talk about all those things. The ability that this team had to throw anybody out there at any given time and then be ready for their number to be called and to ultimately make the play to win the game, that was most impressive. I could go through a dozen names of guys that popped out on film when I think, 95% of the fan base probably didn't know who they were going into this week.
Well, you know, we said that one of the reasons we didn't necessarily know which way this game was going to go was we didn't know what this team was made of yet. We didn't know from the first 3 weeks of the season because of the competition that they were playing. They were able to handle them. It felt like they weren't showing the playbook much. You learn who this Memphis Tiger football team was on Saturday, through and through. Brendan Lewis, I was highly impressed with him. Highly impressed. Made the plays when he needed to, especially with his legs. He's calm, cool, and collected in that pocket, and he has no hesitation. The moment he sees daylight, he takes off running because he understands that getting any yards against a team like Arkansas is valuable. He kept the Tigers in that game in a large part in the first half to me.
What is nice about him and his legs is it's rare to get yourself behind the chains with him at quarterback. You don't find yourself making a lot of negative plays on first and second down with him back there because he will find a way to make something out of nothing. If he doesn't have anything downfield, he'll take off and he'll make guys miss, and he's more than fast enough to outrun a defensive line and linebackers. Like, that's very nice, but I think that is massive for an offense who has transitioned from 4 years of Seth Hennigan now to this completely new set of characters.
I mean, they're running game.
To have a guy that truthfully does not create negative plays, I mean, it's similar to Jalen Hurts in the National Football League, and we'll talk about him later when we get to trip around
the
National Football League. But, like, the ability to not have a quarterback who gets sacked or gets yourself behind the chains, like, that's massive to winning football games. And I think Brendan Lewis has done a good job of that through four.
And I think
he definitely did a great job of it on Saturday.
The biggest thing of the game, you won the turnover battle. You forced turnovers
by one
in big moments. That was the key to the game for us. We said, if you can run the football and you can turn them over, you can win this game. And that's exactly what they did.
And here's the truth about the defense. They're going to give up yards, brother. They're going to give up yards. Did it in the first half against Georgia State. You look at Talen Green, still accounted for 50 yards rushing and 320 through the air. But one thing that they have shown, I think, through these four games, they're going to be opportunistic. They're going to do everything they can to throw you off and make you earn it. And then if they can take it away and produce turnovers, they're going to do that. They've done a good job of that and definitely did a good job of that on Saturday. All right, now, Ryan Silverfield at this point. I know that up until now, there's just been a lot of noise about the job he's done. He had 2 6-6 seasons after his first season, so years 2 and 3. Then in the last couple of years, he's won 21 games but hasn't made it to the American Conference Championship, so a lot of people have still been down on him for that. But I have a couple of stats to rattle off. 25-5 since the start of 2023, 17-2 in the Tigers' last 19 games, including the 4-0 start this year. 5 wins over Power 4 teams, including each of Memphis's last 4 games against Power 4 opponents. The resume he has put together as Memphis's head coach is damn impressive, and I think it's about time, and we'll see how the rest of the season goes, and we'll talk about the rest of the schedule and how it's going to shake out. I think it's about time to give him his due, to give him his fair shake. And to listen, criticism, it's deserved. I'll criticize all I need to for the onside that didn't work out and gave Arkansas a good field position, for the double pass that didn't work out. But in the end of the day, a majority of the last 3 seasons have been winning, 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 and winning at a high level. And every time he's played a Power Four opponent, he's come out on top. So there just comes a point where you have to understand the guy's done a heck of a job.
Yeah.
And is clearly stepping into his own. And we talk about this all the time, at least at the beginning of Penny Hardaway's tenure. He had to learn on the job. Coming over from AAU, first college job, you have to learn. This was also Ryan's first college head coaching gig. You have to learn on the job. And he also took over at a time where there was COVID, then you had the NIL, now you have the house settlement, the adjustments he's had to make on the fly for this program. It was a bit of a tough situation. But I think he's come through and gotten to the peak of his game at the right time for this Memphis football program.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all know you need to make it to that conference championship game. That is the missing piece of the resume the last few seasons. But it would be silly for us to sit here and not act like that Ryan Silverfield has done a really good job carrying the torch and continuing this era of Memphis football. It was rocky at the beginning. Again, it hasn't been perfect, but in these big games, these teams continuously show up, they're well-coached, and they're able to execute, and that is all about coaching. They are 4-0 this season, so it would be silly of us to sit here and just be like, well, they're 4-0, but what they did two seasons ago or last year, I'm right. Not allowed to be excited about it. Right. That would be silly for us to do. And speaking of Penny, man, the coaching duo that Memphis has with basketball and football, a lot of programs in this country would want that. Memphis is very lucky to have Penny Hardaway and Ryan Silverfield.
Penny,
as their
29-6 last year. And
it's a damn good time to be a Memphis Tiger.
Ryan, since the beginning of 2023, 25-5. You'd be hard-pressed to find certainly in the group of six, a better coaching duo. They've done a heck of a job for this athletic department, and there's no doubt about it. All right, now looking to the rest of this schedule, coming up next week, you'll be on the road at Florida Atlantic and Boca. Then you have Tulsa, and then you'll have, after the bye, at UAB. In all likelihood, I know Tulsa's improved. You would hope that they, and we can look ahead, right? One thing at a time, I get it, but we can look ahead. The likelihood of a 7-0 Memphis versus a 6-1 South Florida going into that Saturday, October 25th, with both of the teams potentially being at the back end of the AP Top 25, that's a very real possibility. And this season, in the way the American has played, they have six Power Four wins. You have teams stepping into their own. Temple's been better. Rice has been better. North Texas is way better, substantially better. They're sitting there at 4-0. The way this season is playing out, there's going to be a lot of excitement around the American Conference football season and certainly around this Memphis team with what they just accomplished on Saturday.
If we didn't have A&M at LSU that same weekend or Ole Miss at Oklahoma,
right,
I'd say there might be another potential chance for a game day type of situation.
The truth of the matter is you have three games you're circling the rest of the year
right.
that are going to tell you all you need to know, and they're all at home, luckily. South Florida, Tulane, Navy. And I think that one at East Carolina could be a little bit tricky, depending on where this
Don't
team is at,
Rice.
Injuries and everything else. Rice has been solid. you're going to be on the road for that game. But those three games, that's your season for the rest of the way. Home versus South Florida, home versus Tulane, home versus Navy. Let's see it.
They're in the driver's seat now.
You're in the driver's seat. And as far as college football playoff hopes and chances to win the American Conference, I looked at ESPN FPI today. 42.7% chance for the Memphis Tigers to win the conference, according to the Football Power Index by ESPN. And they are leading in percentage among group of six teams to make the college football playoff. Isn't that – I mean, that's insane, Connor. That's absolutely phenomenal. 36.6% chance they're leading all other group of six teams by 10 percentage points.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
That's a fun place to be in, isn't it?
Very fun place to be. Well earned. What a win.
And final thing I will say to my Arkansas fans out there, actually had very enjoyable conversations. I hope they had a good time in Memphis, besides the loss and how it happened. But I will say to you guys, that was cruel and unusual. And it has been cruel and unusual the last 2 weeks for you guys.
Be kind to your Arkansas friends.
I mean, that's
friends.
That is
be
tough.
Kind.
2 weeks in a row where a fumble does you in when you're on the way to go score and win a ball game. I can't imagine the headspace that Arkansas fans are in right now. Obviously, they want Sam Pittman to go. They want everybody fired. But you look at the way the last two games have ended for them, and it's hard for me to sit here and say Sam Pittman's at fault. Yeah, he recruited the guys that made these mistakes, but no one told them to make those mistakes. Those are mistakes you can't make in those situations. They know that. Everyone knows that. The coaching staff knows that. I'm sure before they went into the huddle, before both of those drives, they said ball security is the main thing here. Hold on to the ball and we can win the game. Two fumbles in two games that were right there on the table for them to win. They could very well be 4-0, but they sit there at 2-2. And I think that really is kind of the Sam Pittman experience. 7-19 in his tenure in one-score ball games. So I think I agree with you. We had our fun on Saturday. Be nice to your Arkansas brethren. Be nice, because I can't imagine the feeling in the pit of their stomach and in their heads about where this football program is at. No fun at all for them.
Zero fun, sir.
Just to be completely honest. All right, now let's break down the rest of college football week four when we return, and I'll ask one big question. Is the Dabo Swinney experience at Clemson officially over? It was a fun Saturday in Memphis. There's no doubt about it, with the Tigers winning 32-31 over the Arkansas Razorbacks. But elsewhere on Saturday, there's a lot of action. There's a lot of action. Now, we'll go ahead and start with another American Conference game. This one was being played on the road by Tulane at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss handed them a whooping. BTA. Belt to you-know-what, 45-10. Trinidad Chambliss, yet again, phenomenal for Ole Miss. 17 for 27, 307 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, 14 carries for 112 yards, and 8.0 average. I got to ask this very honestly, Connor. Even when Austin Simmons comes back healthy from the ankle, is there any real chance or real air that Lane Kiffin should give to the idea of starting Austin Simmons? Trinidad Chambliss has looked better in games against better competition than Austin Simmons looked in the first two games of the season. Trinidad has been phenomenal, and to me, at this point, if I'm Lane Kiffin, I wouldn't even give air to the idea that Austin Simmons is going to be the starting quarterback when he comes back.
You think that Trinidad's taken the job completely?
I to be honest, I'm a very big, if it ain't broke, don't fix it guy. I'm also very big on when someone performs at that level in games like that, important games, I'm not going to take him out of the starting lineup until he gives me a reason to.
What I think that's been so impressive about Trinidad is how well he takes care of the football, and I think his decision-making has just been better than Austin Simmons. I think he's a bigger threat with his legs. I think that his arm is just as good, as if not better, and he takes care of the football. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if Trinidad has a job moving forward.
I think he should. I truly think he should. Until he gives you a reason to turn back to Austin Simmons, I don't think Austin Simmons should be starting. And I'm not closing the door on Austin Simmons being a good quarterback for Lane Kiffin.
No, not at all.
But Trinidad Chambliss has been undeniable through two games. With his legs, with his arm, with the way he takes care of the football, and also just generally with the way he commands that offense. He's done a really good job with it in a short period of time after transferring from Ferris State. So, to me, based on what I've seen from him, I think it's going to be really hard for Austin Simmons to come back and convince the coaching staff to go with him as the starter. Moving right along, Big 12, you had number 16 versus number 17. Utah at home, number 16 versus number 17, Texas Tech. And really this game going into the weekend was about, okay, you have a program who builds themselves on physicality and continuity in Utah with what Kyle Whittingham has done for a long, long time. One of the best sort of unheralded coaches in college football. But you have Texas Tech and Joey McGuire paying for a roster. Upwards of $30 million. Well, the roster that was paid for prevailed in a big way, 34-10, and that was even while the starting quarterback for Texas Tech, Baron Morton, got knocked out of the game early in the second half. Will Hammond came in, 13-16, backup quarterback, 169 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. They handled Utah. It was not even close. It never felt like Utah was going to climb back into that game. In the end of the day, Texas Tech outgained them, even with a backup quarterback, by 221 yards. It was an impressive performance, and I think it does signal to us where we're headed in college football. If you pay the amount of money that you need to for a roster and get the right talent on said roster, you can run things and win championships. Even if it's a quick turnaround, even if these guys have not been on campus but for 6 months, they can still make some things happen to you if you turn it around quick enough.
Is Texas Tech the best team in the Big 12?
I think they are in the driver's seat to win the Big 12. I don't think there's really much of a question outside of that. Now, obviously, Arizona State had a big win over Baylor.
Right.
On the road this weekend, so that's massive for them. Iowa State's still around. But when I look pound for pound and I look at talent, and I look at what Texas Tech has done to turn around their defense. Devin Dampier was probably on the short list to win the Heisman going into this week. And obviously the transfer from New Mexico has been playing quarterback for Utah. He had 162 yards, two picks, no interceptions in this game. And he's a runner as well, 11 carries for 27 yards. Run defense, pass defense showed up. Texas Tech is not used to having a defense as talented as they have right now, and it's showing through. So I would put them in the driver's seat to win the Big 12. Right now, they look like the best team, and I think it goes them, probably a big space, then that group of Iowa State, Arizona State, Baylor, sort of in that grouping. But Texas Tech, to me, looks like they're head and shoulders from a talent perspective above anybody else in the Big 12. Tennessee got the win over UAB 56-24. Nothing to really pay attention to there.
Bounce back
win. I will say, Joey Aguilar, he continues to impress. 15 for 22, 218, three touchdowns in this game. So he's a guy that, as the season goes along, if he wins some games in the SEC, which I expect him to do, they get to 9 or 10 wins. You could be looking at him in the Heisman race and sitting in New York at some point because he has been very good for that Tennessee program so far this season. The Oklahoma-Auburn game, 24-17, Oklahoma gets that win. Auburn just at the end made a mockery of their opportunity. Jackson Arnold was not ready for that moment at the end of that game to go down, drive the whole field, and score a touchdown when it was 22-17. Instead, takes a couple of sacks, then takes a sack in the end zone, couldn't get the ball rid of the ball. Here's a safety. What was interesting, though, I think it's the first time ever, because I was not aware that you could do this. I know I'm a football guy, I was not aware. First time ever I've seen the ensuing safety punt be kicked as an onside kick. I did not know that he dropped it. It was a drop kick, onside kick that they attempted at the end of that game. I did not know that you could do that, quite frankly. But that was very interesting. But Oklahoma now 4-0 and in a really good spot.
Their defense really, really good has been phenomenal.
They're going to have Kent State. Then they're going to be on the road at Texas. They have the open week this week. Then they're going to be on the road at Texas on October the 11th. And based on the way Texas has played, I know this week they played Sam Houston State and put it on them, 55-0. You have Arch Manning standing over a guy in the end zone after getting a rushing touchdown. But
at Texas, Red River Showdown, Red River Rivalry, whatever they call it these days. I'm not counting out Oklahoma that game. Texas has not shown me near enough to be a full believer in them separating themselves at the top of the SEC, as we once thought going into the season.
Well, Oklahoma has beat two legitimate teams in Michigan and Auburn now, and their defense has been the biggest factor why, in my opinion, in both of those games. So if you have a defense like that showing up against Texas, you'll have a shot.
Now, speaking of Michigan, 30-27 over Nebraska. I feel bad for Nebraska officially.
Not bad.
That's tough. Although Dylan Raiola, I saw a lot of people out there criticizing him, and I know it's kind of like low-hanging fruit with the Patrick Mahomes impressions and all that he does in that realm. But I thought he played a really damn good game for the most part. He had one pick, one mistake, but he was getting pressured the entire day by that Michigan front. And that Nebraska offensive line did not help him in the slightest. Seven sacks. Got sacked seven times. Still went 30 for 41, 308, three touchdowns. I thought he was impressive in this game. But Bryce Underwood, in his second opportunity on the road in a crucial environment, I thought he delivered for the most part. Obviously, Justice Haynes was the biggest sort of playmaker on that offense. 17 carries, 149 yards, and a touchdown. But Bryce Underwood had a long 37-yard rush touchdown to basically put the game on ice. And this was even with Nebraska at half getting a Hail Mary and getting gifted a touchdown by Michigan, 17-7 at half. But they just, when you feel like they're on the precipice of breaking back through and being a real contender in the Big Ten, they're never able to get there. Never quite able to get over the top. Mizzou handled business against South Carolina, 29-20. Bo Prabula's a stud, but Ahmad Hardy's even better. Ahmad Hardy is the leader in the country in rushing, and he was phenomenal against the South Carolina defense. 22 carries, 138 yards, 6.3 average, and a touchdown. He continues to roll, and Mizzou continues to roll 4-0. And they have a schedule that, if you just look at it now, is not like murderer's row. In a couple of weeks, yes, after the bye week, they're going to have Alabama. But you have Auburn, you have Vandy, you have Mississippi State, you have Arkansas on the schedule. This could be another 10-win Mizzou team after starting 4-0. Continuing down Florida, no fun. No fun for them at all. Miami wins 26-7 in just the ugliest game in America over the weekend. And DJ Lagway, I thought he overcorrected this week. Threw five picks against LSU, and he was not even trying to take chances with the ball this week. 12 for 23 for 61 yards. Didn't throw a pick, but 61 yards, 2.7 average. When he was completing passes.
How does Billy Napier still have a job?
He won't soon. He won't soon. And we'll talk to Harold Grader about it later at 6 o'clock. But he's talked to some people in the Florida orbit about what's going to happen with him. And they think he'll take to the end of the season. But I am of the opinion, if they lay an egg against one of these SEC opponents in the next couple of weeks, because they're going to have some tough games in the next 3 weeks, if you get beat by 21 or more, I feel like you're probably going to see Billy Napier as an in-season firing. And then before we get to Clemson real quick, Indiana 63-10 over number 9 Illinois. Now, they moved up 8 spots in the AP poll. They're at number 11. And by the way, for the Tigers, they got 23 votes this week. They're back in the others receiving votes, 31st if you do that.
Make the graphic.
But Indiana moved up 8 spots. But with that win, Connor, I think they should move up more. Their defense was suffocating. They outgained Illinois.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
579 to 161. Fernando Mendoza, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. They ran the ball, 49 carries for 312. Like, I look at this team, and this may sound insane. This may sound insane. Indiana football made the college football playoff last year with 11 wins. I think this team may be better. I think this team is better based on what I've seen so far this season. Now, Connor, I know you revel in this, but Clemson lost another one. They are officially 1-3. Last week, Dabo said he could be anywhere doing what he's doing. You should rely on what he's done in the past. And just because they're down right now doesn't mean they're always going to be down. But they lost to Syracuse. Syracuse at home. 34-21. And Syracuse offensively with Steve Angeli did just about whatever they wanted. They had a 94-yard rusher and Yasin Willis. Angeli finished 18 for 31, 244, and 2 touchdowns. I mean, it's now at this point, we should be discussing if Clemson is going to sit around with that fan base on fire right now. Angry as all get out. Are they going to sit around and continue to deal with Dabo Swinney's antics and how he approaches these situations? You can do it once. You can't continue to do this throughout, you know, 15 weeks of the season, 16 weeks of the season. That's not how that's going to work. After every loss, you can't come back up to the podium and say, look what we did the last 10 years. If you're sitting there at the end of the year at 6-6, none of those fans are going to want to hear that anymore. If you're playing in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, no one's going to want to hear that. So I'm curious how this is going to play out the rest of the year. I'll be watching. I'm not going to project anything because I don't know how they're going to handle it at Clemson. But that's going to be one of the most interesting stories to watch throughout the rest of the year.
It's going to be so weird when like 12 Clemson guys get drafted in like the first few rounds of the NFL draft too. It's just, I don't understand how this team isn't. Well, to be honest, I can. Because when you have a head coach who is sitting there pretending as if he is owed this great deal of praise because of what he did the last decade, which he won a lot of football games, best Clemson coach of all time. This team, those players in that locker room, don't want to sit there and hear about your past. I can't.
They haven't done it. They came to Clemson to do that.
I can't see.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.